Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles, back in our television studio. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio. Yes, once again, first time in over 2 months, back at FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. I feel, due to sanitation and sanitization or whatever the word is, feel safer here than I do at my own home. Our company, Fox Sports, has done a remarkable job. There is a handful of people in tech. Joy is 10 feet from me. Now, everybody always made fun of our set, Joy.
Yep.
And they said it was Colin sitting on this empirical desk looking down at the world. Well, who's laughing now? Not Bill Simmons, because this set is why we can come back. I'm up here. She's over there. And we are going to continue doing our show, finally back at FS1. We want to thank our bosses. We want to thank everybody. It is amazing coming into work today. I feel fresh air. We have a lot of space. The practices and the rules we're applying now to get in the building through security, everything sanitized, masks for everybody, social distancing. Even our muffins delivered for breakfast are socially distancing. Our muffins are 6 feet apart, but it is remarkable. And I honestly feel it just lighter today. I feel like we've made progress today.
I'm so, so happy to be here. It's so good to see your face, Colin. It really is. I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, this is amazing. It's like the best day. I feel like a new person. I told you I put my heels on for the first time in 2 months and twisted my ankle.
Yes.
I'm like literally being reintroduced to the wild. It's amazing.
Yes, it is. So let me start with something. The place I used to work at has been doing a lot of lists lately. That's what you do when you don't have games and we have to fill space. Content now, is it a premium? But they actually had a list that I thought was kind of interesting, and it's timely too. The top 10 all-time NBA players was introduced by ESPN. Number one is Michael Jordan. I'm not going to argue it. That's a topic for another show. What's interesting, though, number two, LeBron James, is a current Laker. Number three is Kareem, a former Laker. Number five, Magic. Six, Wilt, Lakers. 9, Kobe. 10, Shaq, Lakers. Number 7, Larry Bird, rival to the Lakers, as was Bill Russell, number 4. This, of course, is another reason to restart the NBA season. You have to remember, the number one brand in the NBA right now is LeBron. The Lakers are number two, because the NBA has succeeded without the Lakers being relevant for the last 10 years, 8 years, 7 years. The Eastern Conference collapsed on television when LeBron left it. Much like the NBA lost 50% of its ratings when MJ left. There is no other MJ, and there is no other LeBron. For years and years, think of the rich history in golf. I argued with golf purists, guys with like one handicaps. Rory's going to be the next guy, and this kid and that kid, and there is no other Tiger Woods. It's why I never understood the criticism. Just hug him, embrace him, and love him. He's a comet. He's a meteor. Like Michael Jordan, there is no duplication. Tiger Woods, from 99 to 03, won 32 tournaments. Next closest was 8. We had a term. It was called the Tiger Slam. We never had to use it before because nobody really thought it was possible. What do you call it when a guy won all 4 majors? Folks, there's no other Tiger. There's no other Michael Jordan. And frankly, there's no other LeBron. I don't want to hear about Kawhi, who's a wonderful player, but he doesn't talk. Giannis is spectacular, but he's in Milwaukee, he's international, and his game isn't really glamorous. Oh, there's Kevin Durant, but he can be snippy, aloof, and a little distant and moody. He doesn't feel like the face of a league, just really talented. There's James Harden, but I find his game at times unwatchable. And there's Zion, who's remarkable, but a kid. We don't know how good he'll be. And frankly, can that kid stay healthy? The closest thing we have to LeBron James in this league as a face is Steph Curry. He's now sneaky old. He gets hurt a lot. He's kind of private, a family guy, and doesn't feel like he'd be as comfortable being the face of the league. When you had Jeter and A-Rod, get them on television. You're never going to have a Jeter-A-Rod combination. Two great guys, two good-looking guys on the number one franchise in baseball. You just put them on TV, regardless of what network you are. When LeBron and the Lakers come back, if in a very bumpy season you have an opportunity to get it done, you do. Don't kid yourself. This has been a rough NBA season. 1 year ago today, guys like me were talking about all the duos that were going to happen next year. Think of how ugly this season has been. The death of David Stern, the death of Kobe Bryant, the multiple stars injured, the China debacle. This has really been, by and large, a mess. How do you save it? LeBron and the Lakers. Six of the 10 all-time best players in this league are Lakers. Two others, Russell and Bird, are tied to the Lakers. You don't get LeBron again. This is it. There's never going to be a high school kid good enough to walk into the NBA and drop 20, 10, and 8 his first game. And oh, by the way, never get in trouble. Elevate others. Smart, thoughtful, mindful, start schools. That's it. Just appreciate him. Put your arms around him. You're not going to get that again. You're never going to get a player like Michael Jordan, who was the best-looking guy in the league and the most glamorous guy in the league. And he was polished and refined because he had amazing parents. And then Dean Smith, and then Phil Jackson, and then David Falk. Everybody supporting David Stern, Phil Jackson, unbelievable parents, Dean Smith. That's not going to happen again. There's no more Tigers. Never forget this, that Michael Jordan in 98, you're watching the documentary, that final got nearly 30 million viewers. Now think about that. That's double what our college football national championship gets. 30 million. The NBA finals didn't average over 20 for 18 years. That was with LeBron. Okay? So LeBron is the closest thing in terms of big and glamour and dominant. When I used to watch Michael Jordan play, I used to always think, man, there's a gap between Michael and number two. When you watch LeBron play and the number two is Kevin Durant or Kawhi, yeah, that's a big gap. You have to take advantage, if at all possible, on LeBron James and the Lakers. Because frankly, you're never going to get it again. The Bulls were irrelevant. They were a Midwest franchise that had won about 50% of their franchise games. You're never going to get A-Rod Jeter to the Yankees again. Dynamic, big stars, controversial, good looking. It just doesn't happen. So when you get it, take advantage of it. All right, I saw this story. It infuriated me. I saw this story this morning, and it makes no sense, but I'm going to talk about it. Cam Newton rumors. Of all the teams in the league, guess where the Cam Newton rumors are? Not a bad team that could use his dynamic flair and athleticism. Not a team that doesn't really know who their quarterback is. Not a team who has a quarterback that needs to get pushed. Nope, here's the latest rumor today. The Seattle Seahawks would be open to adding Cam Newton. Once again, absolute nonsense and disrespect for Russell Wilson. A, Russell Wilson never gets hurt. Why spend a dollar on a backup? Two, Seattle's a Super Bowl potential roster. Why bring in a celebrity backup? And three, Russell Wilson is a workaholic. He doesn't need to be pushed. Where Cam fits, of course, is in Pittsburgh, where Big Ben is often hurt. Big Ben is not a workaholic. Big Ben is always limping. Where Big Ben needs to be pushed. And frankly, the backups in Pittsburgh are not very good. I saw another rumor yesterday. This made the interweb. Seahawks rumored to have offered Russell Wilson to the Browns via a trade back in 2018. Russell Wilson for picks? Can you imagine the mayhem today if the story came out that Aaron Rodgers was about to be traded to the Browns? Can you imagine what that would do? How people would be outraged? Can you imagine if Russell Wilson was rumored today to be traded, or Big Ben was rumored to be traded to Cleveland? Oh my God, Big Ben would pout for a year. Big Ben, his drama. But every time there's a rumor about Russell Wilson, Cam Newton today, yesterday he was going to get traded to the Browns, the ESPN article that slammed him, not a peep. Not an ounce of drama. This would literally unravel a Packers season. This would unravel Big Ben. But you know what Pittsburgh does that Seattle doesn't? Pittsburgh, even though Ben is hurt, even though Ben doesn't work hard in the offseason, even though Ben is overly dramatic, even though Ben struggles with a lot of teammates, the Steelers ownership and general manager and coach are always in his corner. And stories like this, true or not, would never get out. In the last 2 days, two stories. We wanted to trade Russell, and why not bring in Cam? Absolute nonsense. That Russell Wilson once again has to deal with this crap. They wouldn't do this in Pittsburgh. Though Cam in Pittsburgh makes a ton of sense. Big Ben needs to be poked, needs to be pushed. Big Ben gets hurt. The back's up horrible. And Big Ben and Cam, their games have a lot of similarities. Russell Wilson's game has no similarity. He's not distracted. He's not hot and cold. He's not inefficient. He doesn't need attention. Russell Wilson was on our show recently talking about Michael Jordan's documentary. Here's Russell Wilson.
He has this unbelievable competitive edge, you know, this unmatchable competitive edge that, you know, I want to bring to the field every single time I play. When teams see me in the fourth quarter, when I'm walking on the field, they already know. I want them to anticipate what's going to happen. I want them to feel that before I even walk onto the field. What Michael was able to do is, it wasn't that he wasn't positive. He was just positively sure what it took to be great. I think, you know, some people, you know, communicate differently. You know, to me, at the end of the day, though, you have to be consistent. What makes a great player a great father is they're consistent every day.
That's the guy you want to trade to Cleveland? That's the guy you want to potentially inhibit bringing Cam in? Pete Carroll should come out today. John Snyder should come out today and either refute these stories, be embarrassed about them, or maybe try supporting Russell Wilson. Pittsburgh does to the severely more flawed Big Ben.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Shaquille O'Neal said, scrap the NBA season without an asterisk. And I want to remind you, for all of us for the next 12 to 18 months, life is going to be an asterisk. College kids are going to graduate online. Everybody's Phoenix University, even kids at Harvard. Is that an asterisk degree? Our presidential election may be decided by over 50% mail-in votes. That favors Democrats. You're going to have to put an asterisk on that too, right? We understand people will lose jobs, and they did nothing wrong. It's the new world. It's the new normal. It's the new reality. Sports has always been filled with asterisks. We just don't use them very much. Tom Brady, the current dynasty and the GOAT at quarterback. Let's see. The NFL moved Peyton Manning out of his division very early, and they had multiple scandals. No asterisk. The Toronto Raptors won the NBA championship last year. Steph and KD, the two best Warrior players, out. Klay was hurt. Golden State's first win over LeBron. Kyrie Irving played half of one game in the series, right? And Kevin Love missed all of it. We don't give asterisks. Look at the New York Yankees. They have an annual asterisk. The Yes Network. They simply can buy more players in a sport with no salary cap. We just have to realize baseball right now is arguing about money. I think the players should cave. Not that I'm pro-owners, but I do think people that are rigid and people that are stubborn are going to lose in the new normal. Let's not worry about plans, about how it used to be. We know, I said this the other day, there's never been a great movie with a bad ending. Ever. Never, never in the history of movie making. Nothing's ever won the Academy Award for Best Picture that had a really bad last 12 minutes. But there are movies that have been kind of clunky and average with great endings that get nominated and occasionally, albeit rarely, win. Our life for the next year is going to be one big asterisk. It's okay. Let's just end it well and get back to business in baseball and the NBA.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Co-host, first things first, Joy and I were saying we have not been in this studio for some time. My friend Nick Wright joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz and the Best or Nothing, has not been out of his house for 2.5 months, so he doesn't want to hear my pity and nonsense. Yeah, I mean, it's
Colin just strolling, you know, beautiful Manhattan Beach. Now back in the studio, I'm in the heart of Harlem in New York City, just boarding up windows. But I'm happy for you, Colin. By the way, you look nice and tan. Thanks. Good to see you.
Yeah, I've been outside some. Anywho, all right, let's start with this. So my former employer put up a top 10 all-time players, and you know we can argue about it. But do you believe that because of the documentary, LeBron's 2 and Michael's 1, and that there is some recency bias with that? And a lot of these lists now that are ending up on the internet, it's a lot of MJ 1, LeBron 2, and not much of a discussion or a debate by most. Do you think that the documentary, to some degree, is shaping that or reshaping it?
So I do, to a degree, but maybe not the way you're thinking it. But a couple things. First of all, credit to your former employer. I think they did a very good job with their top 10. They've got their top 9 they have right, slightly out of order. 7 should be Duncan, 8 should be Kobe, 9 should be Bird. West and Oscar should be 10 and 11. Shaq should be 13. And obviously they have Michael and LeBron flipped. But for the Shaq is 13th and they have him 10th. They're very, very close to exactly right. And by exactly right, I mean my list, which is, of course, the official default list everyone should defer to. But to answer your question, Colin, here's what I've noticed with the Michael documentary. We've got a lot of the most adamant, ardent Jordan fans thinking a lot about LeBron during this doc. I hear a lot of LeBron's not to talk about it. I'm trying not to bring up LeBron during the doc. And we have a lot of Jordan folks that either call my radio show or do television shows that seem to be shoehorning a discussion about a player who entered the league 5 years after the doc was finished into this discussion. So I think there's a word for that. I think it's insecurity and anxiousness about the fact that LeBron, if he has not already passed Jordan as he has, that he will in short order. But yeah, for the moment, he might get a nostalgia bump, but those bumps fade, as we see with politicians at times, get a temporary bump from a crisis, and then it fades as things go on. So yeah, I see that somewhat, but I'm not too concerned by it.
Let me shift to Shaq talking about bail on the season because of an asterisk. And to that I say, life is going to be nothing but asterisks for 12 to 18 months, and sports has all sorts of inequities, financial, geographic. It's just the reality of sports, and we don't use an asterisk. And oh, by the way, is the world of sports better with the NBA playing now? Yes. And I think you just can't be too rigid, regardless of what league or sport or commissioner you are. What did you make of Shaq's comments and the encouraging sign this week that Adam Silver and the players appear to be willing to play at a centralized site?
Yeah, listen, I think it would be fantastic for all parties involved if the NBA can resume. I think it's so much easier for professional sports to resume than collegiate sports for obvious reasons. And I do think the NBA is going to find a way to get this season in. Listen, if we end up with an NBA Finals of Grizzlies Heat, we're going to say, okay, this was pandemic influence. The NBA is the one sport where basically every single year the champion is either the one, the two, or the three seed. And if we end up with some bizarre finals, then we'll say, okay, maybe we'll remember it a little bit differently. But I don't think that's going to happen, first of all. And second of all, I have found the discussion surrounding if this postseason happens, will it count fully, very interesting. Because what you are seeing, and I apologize for bringing up LeBron again, but what you are seeing is the folks out there who have staked their claim on LeBron being overrated or his era is over or the reason he's not in the GOAT discussion is rings or failures in the finals, they don't know which side to stake out on. Do I say there's an asterisk and this year doesn't count, but then if LeBron loses, I can't use it against him. But if I say the year does count, if he wins, he gets credit for it. I'm in this glass box of emotion. And so you have folks that want to be able to reverse engineer their opinion on this in regards to LeBron. So I will stake my claim immediately. This year counts. Everyone's got to deal with the same circumstances. It's not ideal, but as you mentioned, nothing's ideal for anyone right now. The champion this year is the champion. The team that I happen to believe benefits from this the most, if anyone benefits from it, is the Clippers, because health and rest was, of all the contenders, was the they had the biggest question mark on. But I still think pre-pandemic, Lakers-Bucks was going to be the finals. That was my preseason pick, mid-season pick, and it's my right now pick. Lakers-Bucks should be the finals. No asterisk needed.
Cam Newton has never been my favorite, but I do think he fits in Pittsburgh really well. For a quarterback that needs to be pushed, is often hurt, with a Super Bowl roster but bad backup quarterbacks. Where I don't think he fits or is needed is Seattle. And we have two stories now in the last 2 days. Seattle thought of trading Russell Wilson to the Browns. Outrageous. And let's bring in Cam, because, you know, Russell, oh, wait, he is a workaholic who never gets hurt and is all about team. I said this morning as I was preparing for this, rarely do I get angry with a story. Cam fits, but maybe no place less than Seattle. What did you make of the stories and rumors about Russell Wilson, Cam, and the rest?
Okay, so I made a lot of it. The first one was, when I saw that Chris Sims had said the Seattle Seahawks, I read it at about 1 in the morning last night, that Chris Sims, I should have been in bed already, was saying that the Seahawks had considered trading Russell Wilson for Baker Mayfield. I said, it's 1 in the morning in New York. That means it's 10 at night in L.A. Colin's a kind of old man. He's probably already sleeping, but damn it, I want to call and make sure he's okay. Like, I am worried about him. Like, if they traded maybe your all-time favorite player for Baker, I don't know if you'd have been, I feel like you'd never gone back to your home state. You'd have just been like, I'm done with you forever. This is an outrage. You might have quit the business.
Yes.
So I was concerned for your well-being on that story. Now, as far as Cam, if I were to rank all 32 teams, if I were advising Cam, the 32nd place I would tell him to go was Seattle. They have the second best quarterback in football. He never misses time. And by the way, they don't even like throwing the football, evidenced by the fact they thought about trading him. So why would you go there? He'd be better off going to Kansas City, because at least Mahomes, we've seen he's missed time with injury. Seattle should be Cam's literal last choice. The hierarchy for Cam, the top five should be New England and Jacksonville, because he'd be the instant starter. They should be at the top. And then three places that have aging quarterbacks that we don't know if they'll make it through the season, or we don't know what they'll be doing next season. Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, and maybe my favorite new Cam Newton option, Tampa Bay. Like, let's just see if Tampa Brady's got left, and maybe Cam can fit, because I feel like Cam fits in great with Bruce Arians. Those should be his top five. Seattle should be dead last.
By the way, I want to circle back to the documentary, The Last Dance. Now, as you referenced, I'm an older gentleman, And so I grew up with Jordan. I'm not learning anything new. It's mostly amplifying what I knew. But I've really, and I'm not a stroll down memory lane guy. It's not, you know, I don't bring up Red Grange for football topics. It's not my DNA. But I have enjoyed a ton of it because I like good storytellers. And there's a lot of great stories in the documentary. Can you acknowledge, though, the one thing about Jordan is that he was a unique combination of great, glamorous, blue-collar work ethos and coastal cool, and that there is something about Jordan that is unique all time. Most great, Kevin Durant's great, but he's not glamorous or always cool. That Jordan does have a mystique that has been earned, and can you acknowledge that he was special and unique?
Of course. Unlike the Jordan fans, like that LeBron might one day be top 10. I don't take anything away from Michael Jordan. He's one of the five greatest American athletes ever. He's one of the two greatest basketball players ever. He is the most marketable athlete ever. He held the all-time greatest championship belt for 93 to 2016. For 23 years. That is longer than any player in any sport had ever held it, except for probably in any of the major team sports, I should say, aside from Gretzky. Good for him. Like, yes, I got nothing against Michael. I agree with all of that. And by the way, LeBron will never sell as many shoes. LeBron will never be as universally beloved as Michael was. All LeBron has to fall back on is he luckily happens to be a better basketball player, which does, you know, is relevant to this discussion. And before I go, because I feel badly because you're back in studio, today's a great day, and I made you seem old, and I didn't mean to. Listen, you're a little older than me, but you're rich LA old, which means you're actually 10 years younger than your birth certificate says, so you're fine. Don't worry about it. You got 40 years easy coming.
Nick Wright, first things first. Good seeing you, buddy. Pleasure. Thanks, man.
Miss you, pal. Talk to you later.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Goulet came up with a topic this morning. And the topic is, our last three MVP leaders in the clubhouse came out of nowhere. Patrick Mahomes didn't play his first year until week 17. Following year, he owns the league. Don't tell me you thought he was going to be runaway MVP. Nobody did. Before him, Carson Wentz was having an MVP season. Week 10, he got hurt. He was going to win the MVP. His first season, good in September, ugly after that. Lamar Jackson last year. It was his second year. First year, didn't play for the first 10 weeks. Did week 11. Dynamic. But when the Chargers got a second look at him, yeah, they figured him out. So three straight quarterbacks had bumpy, didn't play, played poorly, hot and cold, kind of marginalized, and then explode. Meaning, give these kids a second chance, a second opportunity, some confidence. They can watch their film. They get a little bit of a preseason. And so there are six quarterbacks that fall into this category. It is their second year. And before you roll your eyes, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, Drew Lock, Jarrett Stidham, and Gardner Minshew. Some of them put up pretty good numbers. Gardner Minshew, 21 TDs, 6 picks. That's pretty good. Kyler Murray, 20 TDs, 12 picks. Did you know that Daniel Jones, 24 TDs, 12 picks? These guys are completing over 60% of their throws. They all appear as a pure pocket passer to be better than Lamar. They're all getting more snaps than Patrick Mahomes. And frankly, they don't appear to get hurt much like Carson Wentz. If I had to bet today, who would I bet pops this year and either wins the MVP or is in the running for it? So let me start eliminating people. I'm going to eliminate Gardner Minshew. This is a team award. Let's be honest, the Jags are tanking. I do think he's undervalued as a player. Gardner Minshew, I think, is more talented than Case Keenum, less of an arm than Baker Mayfield, but shares some of the same qualities. So I would get rid of Gardner Minshew. I would also get rid of Jarrett Stidham. New England has a conservative system. New England's system's not built for the quarterback. The division's tougher. And frankly, he's got no weapons and no veteran tight end. I think it's asking way too much for Jarrett Stidham with few snaps to walk into a tougher division, Buffalo's defense, Jets' defense, and Brian Flores of Miami's a defensive coach, and to rack up big numbers. I'll now eliminate Dwayne Haskins. First of all, the Redskins are turning over their roster and have an entirely new staff. I worry about maturity issues. He frankly just didn't play enough in college. I think it's a grow year, not an explode year. And I do think at some point in this season, Washington will make a decision on him. He's a big, strong kid who can throw accurately. I'm hopeful. Let me eliminate a kid that I undervalued. He's really better than I thought, Daniel Jones. New coach, new system, new coordinator. Also, think he doesn't have nearly the support that Dak and Dallas do in the roster or Wentz and Philadelphia does. I think they have the third best roster after Chase Young to Washington, maybe four. It's also Saquon Barkley's team. If they win, he'll be engineering it. But I do think he's better than I thought. I don't see an MVP in his future. It comes down to Kyler Murray and Drew Lock. I'm going to eliminate Kyler Murray. It's a team award. The division's ridiculous. Seattle is stacked with a Hall of Fame quarterback and coach. San Francisco's stacked everywhere. And frankly, we consider the Rams to be down. They went 9-7 and didn't get any injury breaks. Let me concentrate on Drew Lock. Most of you didn't watch him because Denver was bad early. He started five games. He won four. He had over a 2-to-1 touchdown ratio, that with a bad left tackle. He completed 64% of his throws. And here's what I like. He's got a young tight end. That's a position in the NFL that struggles in year one, named Noah Fant. I think Noah Fant's going to be a star. Iowa does that with NFL guys. Noah Fant, star tight end. Really matters for young quarterbacks. He also has a great young receiver that you don't know much about from SMU named Cortland Sutton. He had a great first year, 1,100 yards. They drafted two wide receivers to support him, one of them my favorite in the draft, Jerry Jeudy. They also, by adding Melvin Gordon, have two borderline Pro Bowl-level running backs. They went out during the offseason, made their defense better, and I don't even worry about that with Vic Fangio. Bradley Chubb comes back off an injury, Jarrell Casey and A.J. Bouye. And although the division has the Kansas City Chiefs, what do we really know about Tyrod Taylor, Anthony Lynn, and the Chargers going forward? They may make a quarterback change if Justin Herbert blows them away midseason. And Oakland / Vegas, you don't win 8, 9, 10 games when you change cities. It just doesn't work that way, and they still can't stop anybody. My guess is Drew Lock is going to explode for Denver this year. A young star tight end, a young star receiver, two receivers in the draft. I don't love their left tackle situation. Bradley Chubb back, a division in which they can win double digits. They can beat Kansas City at home, and a kid who got very, very little attention last year because, like a Mahomes, he just didn't play much but won 4 of 5. I'm going to bet on Drew Lock. That is my bet. Way to go. I really like that job you did there, Goulet. That was a good topic.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
And with that, we bring on a sport we're crossing our fingers return. Scott Boras, the founder, owner, president of the Boras Corporation, responsible for over $1 billion in baseball contracts. So, Scott, let's start with this. We have a economic reality of a 15% unemployment staring us in the face. And while we want baseball back, it did feel to me, just my opinion, a little unseemly talking about billionaires and millionaires and revenue sharing. Are you at all concerned that that stuff goes public and the optics aren't great on that discussion publicly now?
Well, good afternoon, Colin. I hope you and your family and your staff are well. You know, the players really, and Tony Clark and the Major League Baseball Players Association, they kind of rolled up their sleeves in March because we wanted to avoid this very issue. And the Major League Baseball approached the union and the players, and certainly with the strong support of the players I represent, they reached an accord. They reached an agreement as to how they would handle the 2020 season. And that was a major compromise because players agreed to a 30 to 50% salary cut by doing so. But really, in light of the public health issue and creating a harmony to go forward, that agreement was reached in late March. And it's something that you know, we're, and as Tony Clark has stated, and certainly with the support of the players I represent, that that agreement is operative and what we will work off of in going forward in the 2020 season.
But the owners now are pushing back on that. And explain to my audience what the owners want now, because they initially agreed to that knowing there's not going to be any fans. The owner said, we get it. They accepted your initial proposal. Your clients did. But now the owners are pushing back. Explain where they're pushing back that you're not comfortable with.
Well, in the agreement, there are dynamics that allow for considerations and good faith discussion between the union and the players and the owners about they anticipated playing without fans. They anticipated playing in neutral sites. All these things were the same condition. Matter of fact, the pandemic may have been worse considerations because of the unknowns in March than it is today. So all those dynamics were looked at, and there's provisions in the agreement that allow for evaluative processes to determine whether or not, games can be played. And so this is something that's all within the confines of the agreement. Now, in fairness, there's been a lot of speculation about plans and such that I am told from the players and from the union that those have not been presented. They're just been early discussions. I think any attempt to privatize the gains and socialize the losses, if you will, is that we have to look at Major League Baseball and look at it in the last 10 years and say, you know, the Atlanta Braves were bought for $450 million. They're now worth $1.8 billion. The Cleveland Indians were purchased for $323 million. They're now worth, $1.1 billion. The Atlanta Braves revenues are public because they're a publicly owned company. In 2016, they had roughly $262 million in revenues. Last year, they had $476 million in revenues, a $215 million gain. And when you're a business owner, as am I, you have situations in your business that are upstart. And there are situations that are difficult, and you certainly don't go to your salaried employees and expect them to spread the losses during bad years alone, but not participate in the gains. So I think that concept is something that by general aspects, we've got to look at. Major League Baseball is very, very successful. We're having a difficult year because of the pandemic, and the players have compromised by reducing their salaries dramatically and the number of games they play to accommodate them. And I think it's something that when we look at how we harmonize the public health issue and the need to function, I think the players in the union have appropriately reached out and accommodated early in this process to avoid any issues.
Could I make the argument that because of the scarcity of sports, if you watch UFC last weekend, the most bet card, one of the most viewed cards, we have such scarcity that baseball coming back, I could certainly argue baseball over the last 15 years of my life has lost a little bit of social water cooler currency in my space, the opinion space on sports networks, that with a scarcity, if baseball came back, you gave up a few more things, the value for the sport going forward would outweigh losses in the short term. There is a macro view here that baseball could be a discussion point in America, nothing else on the table, and that it's worth losing a little bit day-to-day in negotiations for a short time, 1 year.
I think your point is very well stated, Colin, and appropriate and accurate. You know, you'd have to ask, what would a league really pay or subsidize to have their sport on television by itself,
yes,
essentially, and have everyone, that new generation, everyone watch it. Remember, we're with the pandemic, our goal is to keep people isolated, to keep people at home, and have a reason for them to stay at home because they want to watch fresh content. You know, I live in Los Angeles, and there are about 800,000 people in the industry of creating content that are not working. And there will not be fresh content for a while because of that. And so providing Major League Baseball, you may have it on primetime at nights because the fact is that the audience will want to see something that is new and real and normalizing and part of the American way of life. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity for the game to advance itself and also provide, in effect, a new level of interest among a group of fans that they did not reach prior to the pandemic.
Scott Boras joining us. You would obviously, in your world, the players should do less sacrificing than baseball as a whole to do that, which, of course, a sport always has more capital than individual players or agents, and I'm not going to debate that. I do wonder, getting past the financial issues with your clients, is health still a concern, Scott, or are they looking at data points with this pandemic where professional athletes perhaps are the safest people? If you could weigh in on players' concerns about health and also one or two centralized locations, is that still a pushback? You know, players don't want to be away from their families for 6 months. So let's talk health, number one, and number two, centralized location.
Certainly, you know, we've been fortunate. You know, I studied pharmacology prior to becoming a lawyer, but you learn from medicine about models, and you learn that if you have models, you can work off them and you can learn a great deal from them. And the one thing we know from the medical professionals that have had a chance to address and speak to the players I represent is that the age of the is very, very important in this pandemic and treatment of the virus, is that first class physical condition is very important. Having no underlying medical conditions, being tested daily is important. And we found that they did a study in baseball with Stanford and USC where, because of the isolation of spring training, and right thereafter they did the study, and the incidence of people with the virus was well less than 1%. And that was some players and some administrative people. So we know that the isolation aspect and being in a smaller group and being around of going to and from the ballpark, we know that those things are helpful, because obviously you're not in the general population anywhere near as much as you would maybe be by going to the grocery store.
Right.
So the other thing we have is that we have Taiwan, Korea, Japan. We have soccer teams, the Bundesliga. We have many, many models that have been operating for 60 to 90 days, and we've gotten a lot of information about what they're doing and how they've done it. And again, we've had a survival rate of 100%. We've had few, if any, hospitalizations. And so we've had to isolate players who've gotten the virus. But essentially, we're seeing as far as jurisdictions, Arizona is now allowing for sports teams to work out in their area as long as there's no fans. And so this virus is certainly jurisdictional. It has different impacts in different areas. And I think in professional sports, we can adjust to that and really look at this day to day. And really, we have to create a harmony. We have to create a harmony between the public health issue needs and also the need for function to mitigate the social detriments of the health issue. And, you know, mental health, isolation, people working, the economy, all of this have to be a common approach. And I know the baseball players I represent is that they've received enough medical information. They've got it from the professionals. They know that there's varied opinions. But on the other side, I think with their age group and what they know and the fact that they're going to get medical treatment at their facilities daily and be tested daily or so if often, I think they're certainly comfortable with continuing.
If I said to you, June 1st, spring training starts, June 1st, 2.5 weeks from now, realistic or unrealistic?
Well, those decisions, of course, are really relate to the players union and MLB and the players themselves. But my feeling, Colin, is that when you're around elite athletes your whole life and you're around people that are extraordinary at what they do, their routines and what they do are very, very important. And we've had an unusual interruption, unlike any time. People have talked about when players didn't play during strikes, but players were out working out. They were doing things normally. They were around players playing catch, throwing, doing their routine activities. In this situation, players have been removed because they've been isolated. So for me, I believe we need more time for spring training. We need a conditioning part of this, and we need more for these players to get their conditioning levels to a point and before they even begin their skill dynamic. And I'm hoping that whatever date that is, and I'm hoping it is June 1st, but the earlier the better, I think, to get these players more time so they can return to a performance level that they had prior to the pandemic.
Are your clients working out right now, even at home?
Oh, yes. We have a sport fitness institute. We have our own training staff in our company, and we monitor what our players are doing weekly. We have recorded what their practices were prior to the pandemic, and we're trying to do our best to simulate what they were doing, through this. But obviously, now it's with states opening up and things, it's much easier for them to get out and do more normal things prior to spring training.
Yeah. Where's your institute at, by the way, Scott?
We have two of them, actually. We have one in California and one in Florida. And our main offices, of course, are here in Newport Beach.
All right. Good stuff, Scott Boras. Thank you for your time today and your patience with this stuff. I think we're all. I've never wanted to watch a Angels game more in my life, a Dodger game more in my life. So we're all rooting for it to happen, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin. And I think your point about sport being something about what America needs, and it's normalcy. And I hope that all of us are working collectively to reach a resolve on this, but understand